We'll have a very short class. Chapter 3, 12. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Ishtan Bhogani Vodeva. Dasyante Yajna Bhavitaha. Tayaratan apratab yaibhyo yo bhunkte stena eva saha.
Translation. In charge of various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is a very bad person. He's a thief. Stena. Yom bhunkte stena eva va. Eva sa. Purport. Aishila Prabhupada. The demigods are authorized supplying agents on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied with the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods. But all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajnas are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis. Namely, according to different qualities. So the yajnas are tied to the demigods. Different types of yajnas according to the modes of nature. Different demigod worship according to the modes of nature. On the same basis. For example, the meat eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animals is recommended. But those who are in the mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. But ultimately, all yajnas are meant for gradual promotion to the transcendental position. For ordinary men, at least five yajnas, known as pancha mahayajna, are necessary. Doesn't explain it? Pancha mahayajnas. There's some reference to this. I'm sure there's reference to this in the Acharya's commentaries. But Prabhupada doesn't identify what that is. So, next paragraph. One should know, however, that all the necessities of life that the human society requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. No one can manufacture anything. Take, for example, all the eatables of human society. These eatables include grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, sugar, etc., for the persons in the mode of goodness, and also eatables for the non-vegetarians, like meats, none of which can be manufactured by men. Then again, take, for example, heat, light, water, air, etc., which are all necessities of life. None of them can be manufactured by the human society. Without the Supreme Lord, there can be no profuse sunlight, moonlight, rainfall, breeze, etc., without which no one can live. Obviously, our life is dependent on supplies from the Lord. Even for our manufacturing enterprises, we require so many raw materials like metal, sulfur, mercury, manganese, and so many essentials, all of which are supplied by the agents of the Lord, with the purpose that we should make proper use of them to keep ourselves fit and healthy for the purpose of self-realization, leading to the ultimate goal of life, namely liberation from the material struggle for existence. The aim of life is attained by performance of yajñas. If we forget the purpose of human life and simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord for sense gratification and become more and more entangled in material existence, which is not the purpose of creation, certainly we become thieves. And therefore we are punished by the laws of material nature. A society of thieves can never be happy because they have no aim in life. The gross materialistic thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They are simply directed to sense gratification, nor do they have knowledge of how to perform yajñas. What to do? Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest process of yajña, namely the Sankirtan yajña, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. End of purport. Ishtan bhogan hivo deva dasyante yajña bhavitaha tayar dhatan apradayaibhyo yo bhunkte stena eva saha. Prabhupada would quote that last section. Yo bhunkte stena eva saha. Thieves. Goes along with mudha, rascals. So in this beginning part of chapter 3, the getting out of prison or the paradox of once you're in this material world, not knowing why you're in the material world, but once in the material world, and you realize it was a bad bargain, what to do? What's the way out? So we discussed this, I recall. It's you can't do nothing because we're spirit soul. We're active. We are impelled to do something because the soul is active. You can't maintain life. The soul doesn't die if you don't do anything or don't eat anything or just, you know, cease to because you, as soon as you do something, you're entangled in the complexities of karma. So do something, do nothing. Neither is a solution to what to do. Just accept it, just samsara, and, you know, make the best of it. But there is. Chapter 3 is introducing the process of sacrifice. By the process of sacrifice, one can become relieved from that, the karma, the reaction. At least, ultimately, sacrifice unto Vishnu. Because there may be sacrifice unto the demigods. What we're hearing in the purport is, according to the modes of nature, there are types of sacrifice. But those types of sacrifice are also binding. They're elevating, because the elevating principle is you've accepted the ultimate, we say, you've accepted a higher authority, maybe even an ultimate authority of the Vedas. So we'll go to what Prabhupada is indicating here. In the lower mode of nature, there is a desire to not eat foods in the quality of goodness, or eat that which is a product of violence. So I have this mode of nature, what do? Perform sacrifice by taking a goat on the full moon night before a qualified priest who whispers in the ear of the goat, by killing you, this person may also be killed. And then you can take the meat of the goat, the flesh of the goat. So process of sacrifice for those that are in that lower mode of nature. So it's binding upon the performer, but it's elevating through the modes of nature to the point where in the course of many lifetimes, if one is, so the benefit is one associates with brahmanas, one accepts the authority, accepts higher authority. Ultimately, one is in contact with Narayan because that authority is derived from Narayan. One is releasing oneself from the degrading bondage of fruit of work that accepts no authority. So it's gradual elevation. And then there's another principle that's operative, and that is one thinks about beyond immediate sense gratification, that is, elevation of the soul. Even when we not have a clear idea of the soul, elevation of the soul, and elevation of the soul, and elevation of the soul. So, gradually, over many lifetimes, one may start to think about, gee, I should be concerned, if I'm concerned about elevation in this life, and elevation after this life, what about, what is it that's being elevated in this life and after this life? There's something, there's a higher principle. So it leads to, if done properly, it leads to Jnana Kanda, that section of the Vedas. Close the door. And so then one has less interest in fruitive sacrifices, but the sacrifice of knowledge. And then, bahunam janmanamante yadavam mam prapadyate. So the sacrifice then comes to Vasudeva sarvamiti. Vasudeva is everything. Worship, making sacrifices unto Vishnu. And that becomes the, can become the essence of one's life. So sacrifice gradually, by Vedic standards may come to that position of sacrifice unto Vishnu, and through that disposition, of sacrifice unto Vishnu or worship of Vishnu or devotional service unto Vishnu, then one can understand Vishnu. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. One can come to understand who Vishnu is. We go back into what Prabhupada is saying in the purport. Those that do not accept the process of sacrifice, they have no goal. They don't know what the goal of life is. They have no goal other than sense gratification. If it feels good, do it. Sense gratification. And consequences. So then it gets into this area on the platform of the mind, the mental platform of ethics. There's standards that you should live your life by because they're good. But it's good in terms of sense gratification. That's the standard. And if it behooves, you know, if it enhances my sense gratification, then the standard changes. And different societies have different standards of ethics. It's rooted in the bodily conception or sense gratification. So to rise above the bodily conception and the platform of sense gratification, we'll do it one more time, the principle of sacrifice. That's the release from the damned if you do and damned if you don't. Bondage and bondage. It leads to elevation, and ultimately it leads to liberation. Prabhupada put the simple phrase, for those who accept the principles of Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, Krishna is to be pleased. That means even when you bring senses in contact with sense objects, it's so that Krishna will be pleased. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. That's the principle of Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Ruchate. So back to the demigod worship. Prabhupada writes very succinctly and clearly, demigod worship is recommended for those who do not understand what the personality of Godhead is, or who the personality of Godhead is. Minus that, so it's the codes of Varnashram, that's not Daivi Varnashram, but Varnashram, is like a safety net for, like in a circus. They have a person that walks on a tightrope. Of course, they're so expert they don't need a safety net, but the rest of us, there's this very high aspiration for spiritual attainment. And below that, there's a safety net. So if one falls, the fall is to this level, the level of sacrifice unto the demigods. And, you know, in many parts of the world, there's no sense of sacrifice. It's just sense gratification. I don't even say thank you. I just take. And sacrifice is at least saying thank you. We can't survive without the supply of sunlight and water and air. And we take it for granted, but we can't survive without it. So yajna is to say thank you, making a sacrifice unto those who supply the necessities of life. And for those who do so in prescribed manner, they're elevated. They're released from the bondage of gross forms of sense gratification, and they're elevated. But still, that's just elevated to the safety net. From that position, it's made possible to understand who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is by the process of bhakti. And what I'm embedded in chapter 3, the process of sacrifice to the demigods, is a step towards a higher understanding. So this level of understanding is explained, but also the higher level of understanding is explained. Worship of demigods is not needed for those who are worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or say it differently. The benefit derived for one who is worshiping the demigods is automatically achieved by one who is worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or say it differently. If you have a crore of rupees, you have 10 rupees. At 100 rupees. At a lakh of rupees. You got a crore of rupees. Whatever you need is included. That's easy. For those that don't know that there is such a thing as a crore of rupees, they're concerned about the 10 and 100 and 1 lakh. And there's a means, there's prescribed means, so that the benefits that they're receiving, they're connecting with, ultimately, they're connecting with the Supreme. But at least they're saying thank you to the agent that supplied. And offering oblations and so forth. A point that Prabhupada says in different ways in the purport is worth repeating, and that is we're not independent. Or say it in the positive. We're dependent. Say it differently. One who says they're independent is crazy. We're not independent. It's a foolish notion. Since we're dependent, he lists, even for our worldly, so we need food, and for manufacturing, we need raw materials, for whatever we do, we're dependent. So now how do we act in a responsible way when we're dependent? We honor those upon whom we're dependent. We act in harmony with the way of life that those unto whom we're dependent are pleased. It's sensible. It's responsible. It's what this section of Bhagavad Gita is indicating. And the converse is, those that don't, maybe they're not educated, maybe they haven't read Bhagavad Gita or whatever, but those that act minus that understanding, they're thieves. So it's important to have that understanding. Because if you're a thief, there's punishment for thieves. And the punishment for, in the world, the punishment for thief is you're put in jail. And the punishment for the thieves of God's proprietorship of things is we're put in the material world, birth after birth, and a stronger prison sentence with more restriction, just like just recently heard Prabhupada explaining this. Someone who steals a cucumber and somebody who robs a bank. They're both stealing. But the severity of the crime is different. And then murder. Again, severity is different. So there are degrees, in common law, there's degrees of punishment. And under God's law, there are degrees of punishment. also. So it's not okay just to be a minor thief, a petty thief, like a pickpocket. Prabhupada used that example. A pickpocket. You know what that is. They definitely come around in Mayapur during festival time. Anyway, I won't go into stories. So, that's petty. But somebody that, you know, enters someone's home and steals all their valuables with a weapon, that's more serious, and so on. So the according to the gravity of the crime, common justice or jurisprudence tells us that, you know, a more severe crime, a greater punishment. So this human form of life is accountable. Lower forms of life have less capacity of understanding, less intelligence, less facility. So that's their restriction. They're already restricted. But the more one deviates from the standard, the more one goes down and gets further restricted. I think of this like a cow or an animal that's on a rope. Let's say a dog. A dog that's on a rope. You have a long leash or a short leash. And if the dog is running, they may pull back. Or sometimes they, you know, just to keep the cow that's grazing from eating the whole field, they, you know, put a stake in and a certain length of rope. So embodiment, particular embodiment we receive, the soul receives in material existence, is a shorter or longer rope. The human form of life has the longest rope. We're still embodied. We're still controlled, but greater freedom. And go, you know, down the evolutionary scale, and less freedom, less freedom, less freedom, less freedom. And that freedom is reduced by violation of the standards of human society. So we're determining our next life by our actions in this life. And the advocacy of this part of Bhagavad Gita is sacrifice unto the demigods. Of course, Prabhupada is making sure that we understand, and that leads to ultimately sacrifice of Vishnu, and that leads ultimately into eternal service unto Vishnu, if the sequence is followed. So therefore, sarva dharmam pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja. This must be understood in context with that statement. This is a stepping stone to help one get to that position if one follows properly. Then the conclusion, in this age, people don't know what the goal of life is. It's just sense gratification. And it's becoming more and more like that. More and more like that. I could make some sociological comments. Since the time coming to India this visit, I've had a number of flights moved from this place to that place, and a comment, sociological comment, is obviously very well-to-do people just by their manner and disposition. It's now fashionable to wear dungarees or jeans. Like, you know, very aristocratic-looking ladies wearing jeans because it's fashionable. And even like, you know, a jean jacket and jean pants because it's fashionable. etc., etc. So culture is being lost. In so many ways, culture is being lost. So what to do? Sankirtan Yajna, that means of sacrifice that anyone and everyone can participate in. And it's very, very attractive. Just this morning in Mayapur, it was the first day of the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. And all at once, three different groups, well, they went in different directions. There were three groups of 1,000 devotees each. One was a Russian group of 950. And they went this way. And then another group was the devotees that are of Indian language speaking, another 1,000. And then another was the international group. Three groups of 1,000 devotees left Mayapur this morning on Parikrama, going to the places of Navadvip, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from all different backgrounds and all different cultures and all different ways of thinking, that everyone can commonly engage in this sacrifice of chanting of the holy name. And the chanting of the holy name is very powerful. Very powerful. So powerful, scripturally speaking, it can eliminate all the reactions of one's past sins. And practically speaking, we can see persons who are like what is being described here, persons who are coming from a background where they don't have any idea of the goal of life, and they have all kinds of habits of eating and sense gratification behaviors, on the strength of chanting the holy name, that's gone in their life. Or going at least, and then gone. The power of the chanting of the holy name is this. You can display it. Prabhupada would speak like that. That's from chanting of the holy name. And the principles of Krishna consciousness, as he's saying here, so that the sacrifice...
I'll read the last part and we'll end.
The gross materialistic thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They are simply directed to sense gratification, nor do they have knowledge of how to perform yajnas. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest performance of yajna, namely the Sankirtan Yajna, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. So we study Bhagavad Gita along with chanting the holy name of the Lord, and Srimad Bhagavatam along with chanting the holy name of the Lord, so that we can understand the principles of Krishna consciousness and connect with the personality of Godhead. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, you were sharing that Devi Varnashram is a safety net for devotees.
There's a what for devotees?
It's kind of a safety net.
Safety net. So that Varnashram.
Devi Varnashram is a safety net. But like in... while practicing devotees, where does it like intersects? We don't see devotees like doing demigod worship, and like, you know, they are doing Krishna worship and they fall down. So that intersection I don't understand.
Supposing somebody comes to Krishna consciousness and they desist from Krishna consciousness. What will they do? Depends on what they were doing before they came to Krishna consciousness. Commonly they do that, whatever that is. So the principle of sacrifice, if not applied to Krishna, will be applied to something. So Vedic system is that safety net. It's not like we're promulgating demigod worship. Well, if you can't do Krishna consciousness, then do demigod worship. We're not promoting that. But the whole of Vedic culture has that within it. Here it is in right in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3. It's to understand the principle of sacrifice. And if, as Prabhupada made it very clear, if the ultimate object unto whom we should make sacrifice is not understood, then the Vedic system is the demigod, those who are supplying things that you need. So it's more a statement of the Vedic system than it is how we're training our members of Krishna consciousness. But where something that, what about the world in which we live, persons who are not prepared to surrender to the personality of Godhead, sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja, what about those people? Therefore, the Varnashram system, not specifically training people to do demigod worship, but acknowledging the principle of sacrifice as inculcated in Bhagavad Gita, and then, like Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, don't disturb their mind. So we don't go around bashing people for different kind of worship, but help them understand what the purpose behind that other worship is. It's a principle of sacrifice, and as opposed to a doing something religious so that it justifies and elevates my sense gratification, which is how often people look upon their worship, their demigod worship. I mean, it's not in the front of their mind, but it's certainly their disposition of heart. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Yes.
For many gifts which you are receiving, you may say, I'm saying just thank you a word of not having the genuine feelings. How can we develop genuine?
Not having the which feelings?
Genuine feelings.
Genuine feelings.
Grateful feelings.
You don't.
That how can we develop the genuine feelings?
Well, you know, one way to answer that is the way the Prabhupada answered. Srila Prabhupada, how does one become sincere? You know the answer? By being sincere. That was his answer. Is that okay? By having sincere feelings, you have sincere feelings, then you'll have sincere feelings of gratitude. So, we're so prone to sense gratification, it blocks. It obfuscates what our position really is. But if you move from the mode of passion to a moment of goodness and think, so many things that I'm receiving, I've heard lectures where Prabhupada would take 10 minutes and just make a list of the things that we're receiving that we should be so grateful for, because without them, we can't exist. So we take things for granted because we're just steeped in sense gratification. I flying here from Calcutta to Hyderabad, was sitting in the airport waiting for the plane to go, and there was a mother taking care of her small child. And it was non-stop service. Non-stop service. Non-stop service. The child was this, and crying and crawling and running and tantruming and, you know, demanding, and just to, every moment she's taking care of whatever the momentary mood of that child was. And it's not, you know, I just saw 10 minutes of it. She's like, you know, for years. So what is that child thinking about their mother? Gratitude? So we're like that. Just, you know, taking, and our whole life is receiving so many things that without which we can't even live. What to speak of refinements and so on. So cultivating the genuine feeling of gratitude is like time out. What's going on? Take some reflective moments each day and contemplate. Let it go into your heart, what it is that I'm receiving. Do that regularly and genuine feelings of gratitude will come. And then it just becomes part of your life. So it's growing up from being a child to an adult. Only most people don't. They get adult bodies and they stay sense gratification machines in an adult body without gratitude. I'll share a little thing that just happened. On the car ride from the airport to here, I called the devotee who has been practicing Krishna consciousness in America, and he's a PhD student in a university, and he and his wife informed me that his mother has a very serious illness, you know, and she's about to expire. So he came to India, and just there were many details, but the short of it is, from her association with her son up to her parting moments, she was chanting for hours. She never chanted before. Chanted for hours. To the point where she couldn't even articulate the syllables properly. Wouldn't come out, the first part of Krishna's name. So she did the best she could, and they were playing Prabhupada's tape, kirtan, and she was like tapping her finger to the... So she left her body. Just tuned in to Hare Krishna mantra. You know, from a family in Chennai, not a Vaishnava family in South India, but through that association, she has become attached beyond the attachment to whoever she was hearing from since she was a, you know, young younger woman, hearing some katha person. She had completely become moved to a shelter in Srila Prabhupada and his message and his line and his activities. Full shelter. There's further details, but she wasn't at all unclear about the mercy that has come in her life. There's details that it's not appropriate to share, but it doesn't take leaving one's body to realize, wow, I've received a lot. But her son is recognizing. Whew. Because he may not have understood how much he's receiving in his life, but now he understands how much he's receiving in his life, to see the transformation of his mother. Because she received it. You know, the father doesn't have the same... He hasn't received it. They've had the same exposure, but she's received it. And so, what an amazing, glorious passing. So, the spiritual benefit that we have received in our lives, it's, how do you weigh it? How do you measure it? How do we fathom it? But, you know, it's you start contemplating what are the ways in which we're receiving spiritual benefit in our life, and how is that impacting the quality of our relationships, the quality of our internal contemplations, the quality of our happiness, the quality of how we live our lives in the world. It's pervasive. And to not be grateful. If you recognize what you've received, especially from the spiritual perspective, and the necessity, you know, the air is still there, and the water is still there, and the sunlight is still there. The demigods are still supplying. And we're not neglecting them, but we're honoring He who is giving those demigods. So just become mature and you feel grateful, or feel grateful and you become mature. Stop being a child. It's just taking and no sense of what it is that's going on in that relationship of mother and child, or mother and father and child. The purpose behind all activities is to please Krishna. So, how can I know that Krishna is happy with me or not? He'll smile. Yes, Krishna smiles. I've seen Krishna look very angry. There was a situation where, by a stroke of insanity, we had a very beautiful temple for Radha Govinda in New York, and insanity struck, and that beautiful temple was sold so we could have different temples, and Radha Govinda were put into a very small little place. It was like a, you know, like a, I don't know what it was supposed to be. A restaurant on the ground floor and a little hall for their kirtan. And when that happened, 1981 or something like that, I was elsewhere. I was in the Boston area with Niranjana Maharaj, and we were doing our service there together, and the building was sold. So I went back to visit, and there was this, like a construction canopy over their head, and they were on a stage rather than an altar, and there was no kirtan for, there was no, not even a Sunday program. And when I went before Radha Govinda and saw what they looked like, they were angry. I couldn't look. I ran out of the room. They were angry. Get me out of here. As soon as they were moved to the present place, their features changed. I mean, there are pictures, so you can see the difference. It's amazing. And, you know, another, besides, you know, that example I just gave, you can feel like Krishna is very pleased. Those who are the senior devotees, when they, and spiritual master, those who are guiding you in spiritual life, when they're very pleased, Krishna is pleased. We may be in a remote situation, solitary situation. Still, we have those personalities in our life. And that's our standard. Pleasing those persons. Follow the standards that are given in the scripture, and we know that we're pleasing Krishna. That much, at least, we're pleasing Krishna. Like an obedient son or daughter, and if the mother and father will be pleased if the son and daughter are obedient. What to speak of affectionate, but even just obedient. We're followers of Rupa Goswami. If we follow that which Rupa Goswami gave us, Krishna will be pleased. Very simple. Let's become nice Rupanugas and Krishna will be pleased.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, in regard to gratitude.
Gratitude?
You are getting air, water from Krishna.
Yeah.
All are getting. I am also getting. We are thinking in that situation. We are not getting gratitude. Everyone are getting air and water. I also getting air and water. You are thinking in that perception.
Thinking no, what?
You are thinking in that perception.
In perception.
Yes.
In perception, we are thinking in perception.
In perception of everyone are getting, I also getting.
Since everyone is getting, I am also getting. What's so great? Why should
we be getting? Okay, we'll take it away from you.
my question is, but I should feel that it is for me. This class is for me. Not, I should feel. Then feeling of gratitude will come.
If you feel that it's not for you, then gratitude comes. Okay, it's not for you. Is that all right?
In what way I should contemplate?
Ha 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 ha. We should invite you to our GBC meetings. You've heard the expression, taking things for granted. That's minus gratitude. So if it's for everyone, you can take it for granted. But taking it for granted is minus gratitude. But when you don't, although it's meant for everyone, there is gratitude. I'll give a little example, a little personal example from my childhood. I grew up in a family with five children, and my father wanted to teach us stewardship. You know what that word means? Stewardship. How to be responsible in taking care of something that's given to you. Stewardship. It's a nice word. So what he did that in a very interesting way. Maybe it's something his father did, I don't know, but each of us had chores. You know, we had a little chart. Did we mow the lawn or clean the bathroom or sweep the carpet? Or, you know, each of us had something that was our weekly chore. And if we did our weekly chore, he would give us some allowance. It was small. It's like, you know, 25 cents a week or something. But it was, you just let sit there and accumulate it, and then you could do something with it. So he was monitoring what we would do with it. We'd ask him, and, you know, he'd give it, and he was teaching us stewardship. So I was thinking, everything that we have is from my father. What's this 25 cents? So let me take this 25 cents a week and then save it up and get something for him. And the thing that I got from him, I won't even tell you what that something was. It was, you know, my idea of something that he might appreciate. And tears came to his eyes to receive that something. What's that? Well, the value of the something was nothing. But it's the, instead of going off and using it for whatever, buying something for oneself or going to a movie or something that kids do, got something for my father. That's an example. And it was very moving. When I was sharing that with my sister, and she then told the story where it was our father's birthday. And she realized towards the late afternoon there wasn't any plan to make, you know, something for our father and on his birthday. So she didn't know what she was doing, but she went into the kitchen and made a cake. And then the cake, she made blue icing on the cake. I mean, I don't recall, but you know, she said it looked awful, blue icing. But when she came and brought it to my father, he cried. No, he could buy so many cakes, but it was the... And she remembers it to this day. You know, how many cakes has she made in her life, but she remembers that cake especially, because it was an expression of her gratitude for our father. So it's although we're receiving everything from Krishna, acknowledge what are those things that we're receiving. And when that enters the heart, that's what the feeling of gratitude is. And gratitude is just the beginning of bhakti. Because what's the connection? feelings of gratitude are the beginnings of loving relationship. We're going to call an end to class. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.